All right, so welcome to the Getting Past Go, accelerating your app to the Azure Government Cloud. My name is David Shimshik. I am the Cloud Practice Manager at Accelera Solutions. Bryce Harding is one of the principal system engineers on one of the projects that we're doing, a DoD project, and he'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end of the presentation. Just real quick, Accelera Solution has been working with Azure Government since it came into existence. We've deployed a whole bunch of federal customers to it. And we have the largest federal customer currently running in Azure Government, and we've been nominated as the Azure Government Partner of the Year 2 years running in a row. So, after the great presentations this morning, felt it was important to level set and talk a little bit about what is Azure Government. So Azure Government, it's a government community cloud. It's very specifically aimed at federal, state, and local government entities and any sort of partner solutions that partners are selling to government entities. It's very important to know that it provides a physical and network isolated data center. And you heard a little bit about that this morning during the keynote. Another differentiator from some other clouds is that it is manned by US citizens that have gone through some clearance to meet some of the FedRAMP and other compliance standards. All of the data is stored within the continental United States, so that's certainly something that's very important to a lot of the federal customers. Microsoft is putting a lot of investment into compliance. It meets a lot of the federal compliance standards that government customers are looking for. As a difference from just Microsoft Azure, it meets a higher FedRAMP High standard, as well as DoD SRG Disimpact Level 4 and 5, whereas the Microsoft Azure is a 2. And then, of course, CJIS compliance for any federal, state, or local police entities that need to access data protected by that. All right. So in terms of who is using Microsoft Azure Government today, if you're looking to use it, you have some good company. As it was shown this morning, 100% of the cabinet agencies are already using it. As you'll hear later, there's a lot of DoD entities that are using it as well. And then if you're doing state or local, there's a lot of states and local government entities that are using it as well for their own need. So as we heard this morning, there are 38 Azure regions worldwide. That's actually neat, even for government customers, because there can be reasons why you might choose to put a public website that might be consumed worldwide, for example. So it's nice to know that you can put some of those data points closest to users who might be accessing it. But again, in terms of a differentiation of what Azure Government provides, you got two existing regions. You got two DoD regions, right? So these two regions came online at the end of last year. As of 2 weeks ago, they've got DoD Disimpact Level 5 accreditation. So for any sort of DoD customers or partners that are looking to go to market serving DoD customers, that is very unique. And I believe it's the only public cloud that offers that today. And then there are two new regions coming online, so for a total of four separate regions within Azure Government at the FedRAMP High level. So in terms of being able to deploy an application, not only that has access points, let's say like the web front ends all around the country, because as much as we love to know that most of government is around the Beltway here in the DC area, reality is there's a lot of agencies that have side offices all over the country. And then, of course, if you're building any sort of citizen-based services, then, again, that's information that you want everyone to have accessible. And so being able to put those applications around the country means that end users get the better performance that they're looking for. Another piece of the puzzle as you're talking about cloud and specifically Azure Government is how to access the data once you put it up into the cloud. So oftentimes what we find ourselves is we have these discussions with government customers, and you know, we talk the security concepts and we talk about the capabilities that Azure Government provides, and they get excited about it, and usually the, you know, the next meeting, the question comes up, well, great, now that I, you know, am happy to move my applications into Azure Government, how do my users actually access that data? And so ExpressRoute is the answer there. You can also do site-to-site VPNs. We find that those work well, usually for some of the early on testing. But as you scale up applications for internal users, ExpressRoute is really the way to provide that low latency connection from your offices or your own data center. Another point here that's of should be of interest is Equinix is a data center provider, and they provide a FedRAMP compliant connection stack, connectivity stack to all clouds, but very specifically to Azure Government. And so you can extend that FedRAMP compliance even outside of Azure Government. A lot of what you'll find is a lot of agencies might already have networks that connect to Equinix in one way or another. And so, you know, that cross connect into a FedRAMP compliant network stack to then connect you to Azure Government is a really easy way to connect your users to an application that you're deploying. All right, so we talked about compliance, and we'll continue to talk about compliance because really that is the specialty of Azure Government, right? So over here you see every sort of compliance. The important one here is U.S. government. So you can see FedRAMP moderate, FedRAMP high, right? So last year FedRAMP high went live, and Azure Government was one of three clouds that received that compliance. You got DoD level 2 and 4, and then what's missing over here, of course, is the level 5 that Microsoft just received for their two DoD data centers. And then jumping to this side over here, another benefit of Azure Government is the ITAR compliance that it meets. Microsoft does have U.S. citizens within the Azure Government data centers. And then the CJIS compliance, so if you're working with state or local or even federal police forces and they need access, they need to process information that has relevance to CJIS, then on Azure Government, Microsoft is working hard to give you that compliance. All right, so speaking of CJIS, Microsoft is already going. That is something that you get that accreditation state by state. So Microsoft has done, has received CJIS compliance in 24 states. Their goal is to get to all of them. And, you know, very importantly, FedRAMP, right? So based on the rules out there, any sort of federal data or cloud, public cloud data center needs to have a FedRAMP compliance. That's meant to be an end-to-end solution compliance, but as a way to start on building an application on a public cloud, it's good to know that Microsoft has both FedRAMP moderate and FedRAMP high. Now, what's important to understand about FedRAMP is that just because a cloud has FedRAMP accreditation, there's actually a boundary, right, that in this case Microsoft works with the FedRAMP office to accredit certain services within Azure and Azure Government. I think on some of the slides that I received said 27, 28. This morning we saw 32. These numbers are changing fast because Microsoft is making the investment to add services, but then also to take him through that FedRAMP accreditation. So it's important to realize that just because a service exists within a cloud, if you need to put together an offering that ultimately a customer will need FedRAMP accreditation for to ATO internally, you want to use the services that have that accreditation. All right, so talking about ATOs and accreditation, Microsoft has made the investment to come up, don't know if I would call it a service, but they basically built architectures, deployment methodologies, certification, and paperwork. And who loves to do paperwork? Not me. So they have a lot, they've compiled a lot of this stuff to make it easier for cybersecurity teams, agency security teams, to take both the cloud or a solution through an ATO process. So not only do federal customers have access to the FedRAMP documentation through GSA FedRAMP office, but they can actually use Azure Blueprint as a way to get access to architectures for applications, deployment methodologies that already take into consideration the design and capabilities within Azure that you can then use to get your own internal ATO at an agency. And, you know, this is, I think, a huge announcement. It came out, you know, last year is when Microsoft released their two DoD data centers. And then as of, I think it was about 2 weeks ago when we all got the note that they actually got the DISA Impact Level 5 accreditation. So, again, if you have DoD customers or you work for a DoD entity, a lot of times before migrating to the cloud, whether it's an application or service, they will want that level 5 accreditation as a way to take the application or the service through their cybersecurity team to get that ATO. Another thing that's really neat is that, you know, when we started working with Azure Government at Accelerator, I'll say, again, about, you know, almost 2 years ago now, there tended to be a lot of confusion. All the documentation, all the, you know, virtual machine images, the OS images, the appliances that partners were putting into Azure were all on the commercial side. And we were working with federal agencies on the federal side. And so you had to do things like, you know, save off the image off of Azure and upload it into Azure Government and really hope that they worked. And then if not, then you may have had to kind of fix some issues to make these appliances or solutions work. Well, Microsoft has now put in place a government marketplace, so you don't have to do that. In a lot of instances, you can just go in and deploy those appliances. So you can see images like Red Hat, open source images, as well as, you know, again, those virtual appliances from Citrix, F5, Barracuda. These are all available there. In a lot of instances, they include the license that comes with it. So that goes to the agility at which you can migrate or move an application up into the cloud or develop an application and put those compliant appliances that your team internally may be used to using in place in front or with those applications to provide the same level of security that you might have done historically. All right, so we'll just give this feather into Microsoft CAP. They are rolling out services super fast. You know, it's I can tell you from last year, early last year, when we were working with Azure Government to where we are at now, they're on fire. There's a lot of services that, as we talked to federal customers, that were missing, that federal customers had to go and look at Azure to start playing. And now a lot of those are being released constantly within Azure Government. So that that challenge is really no longer there as much. And someone probably used their BI data within Azure Government and just, you know, figured out that they're releasing new features within government every 32 hours. So let's jump into a little bit of more what I want to present, you know, now that we've established what is the difference between Azure Government. But, you know, to jump in, I wanted to highlight why Azure Government. You know, aside from it's awesome, it goes back to compliance, right? So the idea is that when you're creating that application, whether you want to take that through FedRAMP and offer it to a government customer, or your government customer that needs to achieve an internal ATO, Azure Government as an IaaS, so infrastructure as a service or platform as a service, meets the FedRAMP and other compliance requirements. So that ultimately means that it saves time for the development teams, for, you know, sales teams, whatever. It saves them time on having to do the security part, because since Microsoft already has the FedRAMP High accreditation along with the paperwork, you can actually get that information and submit that as part of your ATO. So that's, again, documentation you don't necessarily have to do. All right. So why cloud? You know, I mean, this is probably a silly question at this point, but maybe it's a precursor to some of the points I'm going to be making later. So first is agility, right? So we heard this morning in the keynote presentation about how awesome it was that you could just spin up a workload and start testing out applications. And so that very much is part of cloud. It's the not having to go out and buy hardware, in some cases not having to go and buy licenses. You know, it's also nice that just because you get on Azure Government, you can get some of those other appliances and tie them into your application that you're deploying. And you don't have to buy, you know, physical appliances from third-party entities, which, again, in government world tends to be a whole new, purchasing request and everything. Do it yourself, right? So it's enabling, let's say, a DevOps team or an engineering team to connect to the portal and test out things themselves. So historically, when we all done projects, you know, as it was discussed this morning, you had to go talk to the network team, to the storage team, an application team, five other teams, and then when you were done, you probably had to talk to security and someone else you've never heard about. So that, you know, that just really drug out, just even to get started, how long that would take, which is why, you know, people would reference that some of these projects could take 2 years to just get started. You know, the benefit here is you can log in, you can very easily spin up a couple virtual machines, deploy an application, start testing, validate that the application works, and then start putting in features such as Azure Load Balancing, Traffic Manager. If you need to deploy, again, some of these virtual appliances, you don't need to go buy a physical hardware to do, more complicated firewalling. You can just spin one of these appliances up, put it in front of your application, quickly redo networking, because you don't need to be a Cisco or a Juniper expert. You can purely log into the portal, you know, reconfigure the connectivity so that, you know, back-end database server talks to the application server, which talks to the web server, which then has a load balancer and a firewall in front of it. And you're off to the races, ready to start your application. Automation. That's part of what we're here to talk a little bit about. Automation is critical, and it's really one of the biggest benefits of cloud. When virtualization became exciting 2005 and beyond, that was awesome, but the reality was there weren't necessarily easy tools that came as part of that platform to automate things. And so, you know, there wasn't necessarily all that big of a difference from deploying on a physical server where you would have to do so many cores of CPU and so many gigs of RAM and then so much storage. You did the same thing, you just bought bigger boxes so you could put, you know, 5 or 10 virtual machines on that physical box. With cloud and with Azure Government, the benefit is there are services available that allow you to very easily scale. So even if the answer that you're looking for is I have an application running on-premise and I'm going to lift and shift it into the cloud, after you validate that application actually runs perfectly well in the cloud, it's very easy to say, okay, I don't need, 8 cores of CPU and 64 gigs of RAM. I can just scale that back to a day-to-day usage level, which hopefully you're familiar with what that requirement is based on the monitoring you've done, right? And then I can just set up auto-scaling so that that virtual machine either scales horizontally or vertically. So I can either just, change out the instance type and give it a bigger instance, or I can scale it out and suddenly go from one web front end to 2 to 5 to 10. I was once at a presentation where someone was talking about how they were running their web application or website in the cloud, and due to fears about cost, they just deployed the one server, and that's all that was on there. And then for some reason overnight, while they were sleeping, the website exploded, and a lot of people were trying to use it. So when they showed up at 8 a.m. or 9 or whatever, the site was essentially down and crippled. And, at that point they realized, well, how nice would it have been? I much rather would have scaled that web service up and paid a little bit more for that day, But then, you know, everybody that was coming to my website would have been able to see my content, my blog entry, whatever it was. So it's a nice benefit. The other piece of automation that I think is really cool is you can treat your infrastructure as code. And I've heard that in a few places. What that means is because you can automate the deployment of a virtual machine, an appliance, you know, software-defined networking, right? Storage, you can automate this all and use PowerShell, as we'll show later, or other tools, automation tools. So now, once you spin that application up and validate it, it's very easy to save that configuration off and leverage, let's say, as simple as a PowerShell script to recreate that every time. So now, when you need to make a tweak to that virtual machine, to some of the network configuration or something else, you can stop using the portal, and you can instead make those changes in the code and just redeploy your application. There are some development teams that are learning about this, and it's actually become a fairly standard process that every once in a while, they just tear everything down and redeploy it to make sure someone didn't go in and make a change in the environment that wasn't documented, so that, you know, 6 months later when they're going to release the product, they weren't missing something critical. So these are just some of the benefits of automation, and then cost control. And I think you'll see that this year, cost control in the cloud is gonna become a much bigger topic than it has been previously. And so again, through automation, through creating or migrating an application that starts at the day-to-day usage level and scales up and then scales back down, it gives you that opportunity to actually migrate something to the cloud and, you know, essentially save money. All right, so differences in Azure Government. So really the big difference is if you played in Microsoft Azure or even another cloud, but if you played in Microsoft Azure, let's say 6 months ago, you stood up a trial account. I hope everybody knows that you can go get a trial account. You would have gone into either the classic portal or the new Azure Resource Management portal. And you could have, you know, deployed a few machines. You get some free capabilities there. And so you go to what Microsoft refers to as endpoints. And in this case, it's WindowsAzure.com and Azure.com. With government, everything is a replica of what's in commercial, except, you know, just for the portal, you switch out the .com with the .us. So it's very easy to get to the portal. The classic or legacy portal is something that was originally created by Microsoft when it launched Azure. It's being phased out now, and the ARM or Azure Resource Management portal is what everyone recommends you use. There are a few instances where, as you're designing your application or looking at requirements, you might find that you may still need to use the classic portal, but those are becoming few and far in between nowadays. Another thing that's really nice is there's now documentation meant specifically for Azure Government. So I already mentioned when we got started with Azure Government about 2 years ago, I kept having to search through the Azure documentation and then go over there and test it if it was actually available in Azure Government in some instances, or to see what version of that offering was actually available in Azure Government. Now there's dedicated documentation, which means everybody's life is a lot easier. For developers, the API endpoints, the PowerShell, all those different ways to access Azure Government. Again, it's gonna be the same thing. There's different endpoints. So this goes back to that point that was made earlier, which is Azure Government is a completely segmented cloud. So, you know, it shouldn't come as a surprise that even though it offers the same type of services as Azure, you just have to make sure that you're talking to the right endpoints. There is still a few things that, when Microsoft deploys a new service, not so shockingly, it comes to Azure first. That's usually where it starts, going through the FedRAMP process and other compliant processes. And as it goes live into production, there's a team that then starts bringing it into Azure Government. So you will continue to see some latency between services available in Azure and in Azure Government. That's often important because as you look to leverage some of the capabilities that you might hear, you know, in announcements, you will just want to make sure, you know, and see what sort of timeline they have on coming to Azure Government. One of the nice things is that, again, because there's documentation dedicated, you can actually go see where the services are and see what region they're in. The other point there is not every region has the same exact services. So when Bryce talks later, you know, they were using Azure Automation in the project that he's working on. And as it happens, it's available in US Gov Virginia, but not yet available in Iowa. So some of these things, as you design your applications, or as you're looking to deploy and leverage some of these services, you'll just want to make sure that you check those early on.
And you can actually use those resources if you deployed your infrastructure in Iowa, for example, and that feature wasn't available. In Virginia, if it is, you can actually utilize those resources. And we'll show you the portal where you can check out what availability.
All right, so let's jump into one of the, let me pull this over. So this is the commercial Azure ARM portal. And if I flip on over here, then this is the Azure Government Resource Management portal. Other than a slight difference in the color scheme, it's, you know, very similar. So today, this morning, you all saw some cool demonstrations around some of the capabilities. It works very, you know, pretty straightforward. In terms of, you know, getting started and adding resources, it's pretty simple. So before that, let me show you. This is what we were referring to around where some of these different cloud resources are, and I have some of the URLs in here. So you can see here that the government data center regions are over here, and so as you look at these are different instances that are available, and then it scrolls down for the services, you can then see what regions they're in. So that may help you decide where you might want to put your primary region or data center, and then where you might want to fail over in case of a disaster recovery. So let me kind of jump back here real quick. So, you know, to get started with, in the portal, not so shockingly, it's, you know, pretty simple to stand up resources. This is the marketplace that I referenced earlier. So in the, you know, marketplace is where you'll find everything from Microsoft images, Microsoft capabilities within Azure, as well as third-party appliances and software that they have validated on Azure Government in this case, and it's available for deployment. So under the compute here, and this is where we'll find all the different, you know, processing units, if you will, so everything from Windows to a lot of open source based appliances and operating system, all the way through to some of those virtual appliances that we referenced earlier. Just to kind of go down here real quick, a lot of the networking concepts are, you know, you can find the tools and solutions under here. So on Microsoft Azure and Azure Government, your network is gonna be called a virtual network or a VNet. And so this is where you would set up a virtual network that you're gonna deploy your application into it. You know, you got your load balancer. So again, you don't need to go out and buy third-party appliances. If you need simple load balancing, it comes as part of the service. So you can easily deploy the load balancer in front of your web applications, in front of your SQL clusters, things like that, and introduce load balancing capabilities. Down at the bottom, the other benefit specifically of Azure Resource Management is the availability of network security groups, or NSGs. Network security groups are essentially a virtual firewall built into the network layer on Azure Government. And so again, going back to that software-defined networking, this is where you can deploy an NSG and put in firewall rules, not only enabling what virtual machine can talk to what other virtual machine, but even at the subnet level. So this is how you might design a multi-tier application and then enable that those tiers can only talk to each other on certain ports, for example. Of course, there's storage as well as some of the monitoring and management capabilities, but just to keep up with time here, let's go back to a compute here. And so you can see that there's already some instances kind of that are available. These are some of the more popular ones. We're going to search for a 2016 image here. And so you can see these are the Windows images that Microsoft actually has uploaded. They actually patch these. So as you deploy them, you can always be kind of at the forefront of patching. So if you deploy something this month and then you deploy something a month or two later, they should have the latest patches already in it. I'm going to go and pick Windows Server 2016 Data Center. But there are some other ones over here. Microsoft recently at the end of last year, introduced these hub images, which are hybrid licensing, allow you to migrate on-premise servers into the cloud and essentially bring your own license with it. As you can see, you can also do, if you're just standing up machine, and as a way to save money on your monthly consumption, you can leverage your own licenses there. But let's jump down here. So this is where you can deploy virtual machines into class scan resource management. I'm just going to keep it at resource management. And so here's where you fill out some of the basic information. If you can start defining some of your requirements here as you do it. We're just going to stick with regular hard drives. Always make sure you set a secure password, especially when deploying into the cloud. Keep in mind, and I'll show it in one second, when you deploy virtual machines, Microsoft does expose a couple ports for them by default, right? So when cloud kind of became popular, everyone was deploying it usually for websites and things like that. So by default, to access these machines, on the Windows side, you get RDS that's exposed to the internet. So not so shockingly, if you're watching your logs, usually you will start seeing some attempts with people logging in. Down here, you can see again that we've got our separate data center. So you've got the two regions. I'm going to pick Virginia, create a new resource. And let's move on. Go ahead. No, so when you get into the DoD data centers, you need to get validated by Microsoft. You'll still get an Azure government subscription, but then once you're authorized for DoD data centers, then it will show up.
Does Azure have just a state server?
It does have, it is it as a service, or it does have, so Azure government is DISA Stake 4, and if you get up to the DoD data centers, then you got 5.
It's not pre-configured with all the DISA security. You have to manually do that.
Yes.
You have to use the tool to analyze the setup. And I'll talk briefly about that.
You have to have a DoD sponsor as well to gain access to Azure DoD.
Okay.
Yes.
Right, you can. It's right.
Exactly.
Right. Yep. Which, for Azure government, you need to have, not necessarily a sponsor, but you need to show that you do business with government with an actual contract, and that's how you get access to Azure government.
Yeah, you have to have a .gov domain.
All right.
Did that answer your question regarding DoD?
All right, so I'm going to select an instance size. Now here's where, we're on this third section here. So down here is where you start picking out some of your storage accounts, some of the other pieces that you need to deploy an application. Most of this get automatically filled in. Going back to that network point that I made earlier, this is where your IP address will get configured for this virtual network and the subnet. Now, the reason this is important to pay attention up front is because if you're going to do a site-to-site VPN or if you're going to do an express route, as we, you know, as we've seen when you connect multiple data centers, you can't, you know, depends on how you plan to extend your network into the cloud. So you have to keep in mind that you're going to have to do some routing there. And so generally, you'll want to validate with the customer or internal network what sort of subnet you should be using, because obviously you don't want to use a subnet that's being used somewhere else. There's a public IP address that's assigned by default. You can actually just click on there and disable it. And then here's that network security group. If you want to start locking down ports, you can actually go in there and start blocking some of the ports as a way to make sure that you're secure. Now, normally when we deploy virtual machines, I actually go in and we'll remove the public IP addresses. And one of the first things we deploy within a virtual network is a jump box. So we go into, you know, deploy a jump box, you know, properly secure it, make sure that everything's appropriate, and then all the machines we deploy behind it are not exposed to the internet until we're ready to expose, like the web front ends, for example. Over here with extensions, one of the nice features within cloud is that Microsoft exposes a lot of capabilities, such as an antivirus, as well as some other services. So you get the benefit of, you know, even as a developer, when you're deploying machines into the cloud to start doing some code testing, you can already follow some, you know, best practices and security rather than what was traditionally done, which is let me deploy a machine and just, you know, go nuts and create stuff on it without any antivirus or any sort of management capability. You can also do high availability, right? So if you're building your application, upon deploying the virtual machine is when you need to deploy the availability set. And that's how Microsoft will make sure that your machines don't get taken offline when they're doing maintenance on Azure Government, for example, at the same time. So they'll make sure that if you have an HA pair up there, that it only takes it down one at a time during maintenance. So I'm going to click OK here. And this is where it kind of gets neat. So up here, you can see that that Microsoft is validating all the settings that you put in there, making sure that this machine will deploy. Now I could just click OK and the machine gets deployed and hoorah, I've got my first workload in the cloud. But what's perhaps a lot more exciting is that you can click over here and like I mentioned about infrastructure code, what are we doing here? You get all of the information for deploying the same virtual machine with all of this setting built out as a variety of code. So you've got the resource management configuration files, you got the CLI. So if you're running you know, a Linux machine that you're gonna issue commands through like an application, you get the CLI commands. Over here, if you're a PowerShell expert like Bryce here, then you can just click on there and you got, and it's a little dark, but you get all the PowerShell commands to deploy that virtual machine. And again, that could be a series of virtual machines that you put together and deploy as an application. And then of course, if you're running a .NET, you know, a developer team inside, you get .NET code and open source, you got Ruby. So there's a lot of capabilities where this is pre-built. It makes it very easy to test out these things and then download that code. And then the next time you want to make a tweak on how something is deployed, you modify the code instead of going and deploying from scratch. Not only does that speed up the deployment, but again, going back to automation, change control, security, you get all these benefits out of the box. All right, so you know, you can deploy or download, and I'll just go back to.
Question. Yes.
Does the high availability include the failover between data centers?
So no, and that's an important thing to understand. By default, there are certain features that Microsoft provides, primarily around the storage, right? So you can do locally redundant, which means it writes every piece of data three times. As you saw, Microsoft in each region runs multiple data centers, so it will ride those data across across data centers, racks, servers, the whole nine yard. If you want to do multi-data center, you can do regional write, and it will write it six times. And so it will write it into a second region of your choosing. So, you know, right now there's only two data centers in Azure Government, so you don't have too many choices, but in a couple months you'll get four, and you can decide where you want to fail over. Now that's the data. So what happens is if something happens to the data center, you'll get access to the data that's written into the second zone or second region. Alternatively, you can build on your own solution. So if you're doing, you know, let's say SharePoint cluster, you could do that SQL M plus one type of deployment, which is, you know, or 2+1. You could deploy a SQL database in one zone, one region, and have those be failover. And then you can deploy a third one into a second region. And if, you know, Ashburn or Virginia goes down, you can fail over to Iowa that way. But that is manual. There are also tools that Microsoft provides that you might be able to leverage. And now that's on infrastructure as a service. If you start looking at platform as a service, in most of those cases, there are some disaster recovery capabilities built in. So that is the benefit of going with platform as a service or even a SaaS solution versus infrastructure as a service. So you would have Traffic Manager, which is a DNS-based failover capability that maps to some of the appliances that do like global server load balancing, and then you would do local load balancing capabilities to fail between the servers. All right? Okay, so I'll finish with this. So I showed you how you can download a machine and do that PowerShell machine. So one of the capabilities, and let me bring PowerShell over.
Change your directory.
Yep, we'll do. No, probably should have changed the font here. Didn't think about the number of buffers. All right, so when you're ready to, you know, go from the portal over into start doing some PowerShell commands, there's a few nuances. So first of all, depending on what Windows desktop you're using, you might have to download or upgrade PowerShell to the latest one. That's done through the PowerShell gallery. Once you get PowerShell running and up to the latest code, you want to download the Azure and Azure Resource Management code, and you do that by typing install. Install. And then it's Azure RM. And so the nice thing is I already deployed it, so it's just going to jump right to the next blink. So it will download it, ask you to deploy it. That's all the commandlets, right, that you can actually run. Next, you might run into a policy issue. So on Windows 10, by default, they disable, so you can't run unsigned and in a lot of cases locally created PowerShell commands. So you want to do a set policy. And so it comes locked down. You want to use either all signed or remote signed. If you're developing your own PowerShell scripts or if you're just downloading them from Microsoft, you might even want to do unsigned and just change it back later. So I'm going to do remote sign. Accept it. And then, so next I'm ready to connect to Azure Government. Now this is a little bit different because to log in, Azure. you use login Azure RM account, but to get to Azure Government or some of the other non-just central US Azure cloud, you want to get to the environment name. And then you want to Azure US Government. So when you do that, so this is the authentication, right? When you sign up for Azure Government, one of the things that you're provided is Azure AD authentication into it. And so this is where you have to authenticate yourself. Sorry. So now I've authenticated into my subscription, right? So now, let me come back here.
Change your directory.
Yep. So I'm actually going to run a code that I downloaded earlier. Just copy this in there. It kicks it off, asks me to re-authenticate. Lots of different authentication. Solution. Come.
Hang on.
All right, and I'm just gonna. So what happens is it actually goes out. It's grabbing all of the. So earlier when I showed how I saved off one of those virtual machine creation scripts, it's actually one of those machines that I created earlier, downloaded that information. I'm just executing that PowerShell script. It's going back and grabbing the configuration files and answering all the questions to deploy that machine. So that. Probably won't take too much because it's already deployed, but in the name of time, we're going to go back to the presentation. All right, so finally, the last piece of the puzzle is, okay, we've deployed a machine, we've deployed virtual networking, we've explored the kind of how to connect back to on-premise. So the final piece is, now how do I go from deploying one machine to maybe a whole application? So, you know, you obviously have Office 365, but some customers may still want to deploy a custom SharePoint farm, for example, or maybe a web application using some of the services. So, let me go to all right, so when you're looking at Microsoft documentation for Azure, there's a lot of applications that Microsoft, their internal development teams, have built examples. So here's one that's a web app with a SQL database, right? Well, let's say I'm a developer. I don't know anything about SQL. Historically, a SQL DBA would just give me a database and go say, go build your own table and then write your application. So here, Microsoft has built out this whole application that can get deployed into Azure. Now, it's really cool because as long as I have an Azure account, I can literally just click on that button and it deploys into Azure, except now we're in Azure Government. The trick here is that you can copy this link address. Come back to my browser. Sorry, it's a little hard to be typing backwards here. All right, so I just pasted that link up there. Now you can see, and we talked about the differences between Azure and Azure Government. So up here, that link has azure.com. Well, the good news is, you come over here and just replace that with US and then hit enter. You've become an expert at deploying applications into Azure Government. So I'm already logged in, obviously. So it's going off. It's getting those publicly available templates off of, in this case, GitHub. It gives me all the information I need to fill out, and because it does take a little bit of time to do it, I won't do it, but you fill out that information, you hit purchase, purchase just means go, and it will stand up all of the stuff in Azure Government for you. Now, you do want to look at the documentation, right? Because, again, those developers that are doing this might be leveraging services on the Azure side that don't yet exist on Azure Government. So, again, it's always important to map that back. But it's a really easy way. In fact, it's so easy that, you know, this is a simple, scalable web application. But, and I don't do SharePoint. We have partners for that. But if I come back to here, I have the same thing, and I can create a highly available SharePoint farm with 9 VMs, including deploying SharePoint, building out Active Directory, the jump box, and everything. So it deploys a whole SharePoint farm in a matter of an hour or so that you can then start developing on, testing on, going looking at best practices, a lot of cases recommended by Microsoft. And the good news is if you look at that, that's actually on GitHub. It uses the same exact capability. And so if you go down to the bottom here, you have both the deploy to Azure as well as the visualize so that you can start understanding what they're doing. So again, getting started, wanting to deploy that first application on Azure Government, this is an awesome way to do it because you can kind of ride on somebody else's work, then obviously put in the security pieces of it, deploying STIGs and things like that that you might need, not to mention writing your custom code and whatever else you need to add. But this is a quick way to get started. So I'm going to go back. All right. So Bryce.
Okay. I'll stand here.
All right.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm excited to be here. My name is Bryce Haring. I'm a principal systems engineer, and currently my role is a team lead for a DoD project. The overall project requires Azure Infrastructure as a Service, obtained FISMA compliance, DNS hosting solution, design AD federated services for CAC authentication. So the customer requirements were for based on SharePoint application to enhance their collaboration and capabilities. It needed to be a cloud infrastructure and FISMA compliant for a DNS solution. Also, we needed to procure their domain name for them, also set up their domain services for authentication and two-factor authentication for the CAC. Let's see. So this is really the slide we'll be focusing on mainly. So their initial journey, once we got through the design process, we started setting up the Azure Infrastructure as a Service. After we designed their infrastructure, we decided that Iowa should be their primary site and the secondary site should be Virginia. This is just a diagram just showing how the ports through Azure AD Connect and how their CAC authentication goes through the web access proxy and they authenticate through the AD federated services. So we configured their resource groups, connections, virtual networks, subnets, network security groups, the firewalls. And we also set up for the extended DNS, we used InfoBlox. Which is DISA STIGs. There are DISA STIGs to configure that. We did apply all the DISA STIGs to all the machines. SQL was a manual process, so that was pretty intense. But it's all DISA approved. So we document all those. Let's see.
So the other part to jump in here is the CAC authentication, right? So by default, to do an application, especially if you're using some of the SaaS capabilities of the Microsoft Cloud, today CAC cards or for non-DoD customer PIF cards are not directly supported. You can leverage some of the Azure multi-factor authentication, but ultimately what you would be getting at is using some sort of federation services. So in this case, they used ADFS, and then enabling CAC authentication at the web. So that's the web application proxy, right? So when users go, in this case, to the SharePoint service, SharePoint Online, they actually have to, even though they're in Azure Active Directory, they are federated users, so they first have to sign in with dual-factor authentication, meet those DoD guidelines for getting access to their application, and then once they're authenticated through AD and ADFS, then they're given the okay to log into SharePoint Online. So this is what's interesting here is, as we talked this morning, right, a lot of customers are starting within some of the SaaS capabilities that Microsoft offers, that being Office 365 and related services. But even though those have met certain, you know, in this case, all the way up to DoD level 5 accreditation, there are certain requirements that you can't necessarily apply to them. So as a result, customers may still want to leverage infrastructure as a service as a way to enhance those services. And so that's what kind of Bryce and team did. I think the other part was around the DNS capability. And so there, Azure does have a DNS service that's commercial. But again, if you have compliance requirements that you need, you know, that need to be auditable, that's where they went searching for another solution. And rather than using a third party or DoD DNS provider, that's where they went to the Infoblox, which is an appliance, virtual appliance that's running within Azure Government. And they could apply, you know, DISA STIGs and other compliance requirements to that, and also turn around and it's auditable to the customer so they can validate any sort of compliance requirements they may have.
Also, that's not on this diagram, is a management server that's the gateway. So all these servers you cannot remote into unless you configure your RDP session to go through the gateway. So we lock those all down. Let's see here. Along with all the availability assets, our sets, we secured the infrastructure using the DISA STIGs. We're using McAfee HBSS, and also for audit management or audit logging, we're using Splunk. And for the CAC authentication, we went over that process. I don't really have anything else on this diagram to go over. Do you, Dan? All right. So,
got a question back
there? Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah.
What was your question?
HBSS.
Yes. That's what we're deploying right now. Actually, we already have the Iowa set location configured, but we're working on the Virginia one right now on this project.
Yeah, and they're using the standard, in their case, DoD, like HBSS that you mentioned, and some of the other ones. Also, because when the project started, some of the new login analytics capabilities weren't quite there yet. You know, that's why they went back to Splunk and some of the other solutions that, you know, historically are widely used in DoD.
And through this process, we also found, you know, some of the capabilities are not available in Azure Government. For example, the backups were not in the GUI interface, but we wrote a PowerShell script using the SMTP relay on the management server to send us email notifications every day of successful backups. But now the GUI interface, within the 6 months of us starting this project, is now in Azure government. Okay, so let's get into some automating with your government cloud. What we did in this case, I'll just use an example. We configured the assets and runbook. We added Microsoft or the MS Online module to manage Office 365 resources, add credentials for authentication, create a runbook or PowerShell script, and published, scheduled the runbook to run at, on the top of every hour. And I will show the script here in just a second. So to the key thing about Azure automation and the big benefit, I think, is to simplify cloud management. It optimizes and extends your existing investment because you can actually connect to multiple resources, not just, you know, Office 365 or Azure. You can connect through AWS or other resources. You can it's deliverable and reliable services. It's predictable. And it also enables service owners to focus on work that could add business value. And it'll reduce costs and improve productivity. Let's see. So let me escape here, and I'm gonna, should I just duplicate the screen?
Yeah, you may want to.
No, I can just
cancel
right here.
Out of
the...
It's kind of weird. Nope, that's fine. No.
Just say okay, unsave. So let me go over some of the benefits to why you would want to use Azure Automation opposed to setting up PowerShell scripts and setting up tasks or scheduled tasks on multiple different servers. And also, if there's a PowerShell script that requires authentication with a service account or something, yeah, you can encrypt it, but then you got to manage a separate file. With Azure Automation, it's all centralized, and I think it's just brilliant because, you know, you could set up a service account where developers, if they needed to develop something and then they need the credentials to make it happen, you don't have to provide that password. You can just say use the resource in Azure Automation. So we configured the assets here. So this is where you would import the module. And there's multiple PowerShell modules that have all the PowerShell commandlets to manage all different kinds of resources. You can browse the gallery, and that's how we imported the MS Online. And there's several ones from people that have created them, or this one's a Microsoft one, of course. The credentials we set up, and this is this particular runbook that I configured is just to manage. It does an AD sync of a security group, and then it reads all the members, and then it will assign an Office 365 license. And then it will also compare that array. If they are licensed and they're out of the group, then it will remove their license.
So it's onboarding and offboarding, right?
It's just a simple, small example. I mean, we've done multiple other things, but this is just a nice example, and I'll show the script here in a second. And then also you can schedule it. You can do it hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, however often you want to run the PowerShell script. So let's get out of this and just get to the runbook. So if you have multiple PowerShell scripts that you're using already, you can import these and just set up the modules and then manage multiple resources. So we'll just view it simply. It's probably hard to read. But basically, the PowerShell script points to the resource. And this environment, it's a test environment, so I didn't run it against this, but that's basically it. And then you can save it. Let's see. And there are PowerShell scripts that people have written as well on the environment or within PowerShell runbooks. You can look at the browse the gallery.
So going back to some of the automation capabilities, right? Yeah. So again, I mentioned, for example, cost control. There are third-party tools, such as DivvyCloud, a few other ones out there, where you can do things like automation across multiple clouds, shut machines down, bring them back up. But the nice thing here is Microsoft has very simple PowerShell capability where if you have a DevOps environment, for example, they have example code, or if you have a PowerShell person, they can write their own code, and you can schedule things to happen. So now there's also ways to shut machines down and environments, bring them back up, but you can also do tweaks, changes, and to what Bryce was saying, it's no longer running on the machine itself, which is what, you know, a lot of times we did historically, is we deployed a machine, and then we used that as a way to execute scripts in PowerShell. Here, you can have that be part of the environment and, you know, do everything from deploying machines. You can, you know, again, shut them down, start them, manage lifecycle. You can stand up whole environments. And then also you can do it as part of your change management.
Yeah, and just a reminder that in Azure Government, the resource for PowerShell, our Azure automation is available in Virginia opposed to Iowa. So all of our resources are in Iowa and resource groups and everything. So we're actually running this from Virginia to Iowa to automate multiple things. So that includes my presentation, our demo. Thank you all.
All right, so let's kind of finish.
Got a few more slides. Thank you all.
All right, so thank you, Bryce. All right, so security, right? We can't finish up how to deploy an application without at least touching about security. We know that Azure Government is secure, but in reality, it's a shared responsibility, and you'll hear that from pretty much everybody, every cloud provider, I mean. So what that means is Microsoft goes to long lengths, spends a lot of money to make sure that their infrastructure, their systems are secured, they're constantly tested, they go through compliance. That's awesome. That doesn't necessarily cover your actual application. So again, along that responsibility, there's some best practices that we've recommended. You know, one is once you have a system in production, limit access to the portal. You don't want too many people going in. Again, you can set up capabilities to log into the virtual machines to manage the application. You can even leverage change control policy by leveraging changes to be done through coding rather than going in and clicking around. And so a network person can provide that to a central group that would then deploy that standard, test it and deploy it. Another capability that's really neat on the Azure side is even as you're developing an application, leverage Azure Log Analytics and some of the capabilities that we saw this morning. Now, Security Center is still on the commercial side, but a lot more of the big data capabilities are being brought over into Azure Government. It's very easy to deploy, even if you're leveraging commercial, to deploy Log Analytics and Security Center. And for an environment that's not yet in production, start getting alerts. So even as a developer, if someone from overseas is trying to hack your system, you can do something about it rather than, you know, get a nasty email at some point that, your machine was hacked or something. Interestingly enough, again, Microsoft does monitor traffic coming in and out of their environment. So with one customer, we got an email once from Microsoft that said, stop doing whatever it is that you're doing because you're breaking the rules, right? And so we had to go in. They worked with us to identify what the issue was. We identified it. We were able to fix it. Turned out it was a test system that somebody didn't set a strong password on. And so someone else decided to use that machine to do some spamming. There are, again, third-party management tools, right? So not, you know, Microsoft doesn't solve every problem you have out there, but as we just talked about, DoD workload using some tools that are pretty much accepted within that industry, you can certainly deploy those. Make sure you use strong passwords. Can't say that enough. For a while now, Microsoft and Azure Government offers Azure Key Vault. This is a key management system that allows you to encrypt not just your data drives, but even your OS drives. So you can, even beyond the encryption at rest that Microsoft provides, you can actually further encrypt your disk drives and your data and ensure that nobody but you or your customer has access to that information. Azure Multi-Factor Authentication, again, it's a great tool for developers. You know, as we just talked, there's a way to do CAC and PIV authentication and RSA and other things. But as you have your teams get started within, you know, Azure and Azure Government, multi-factor authentication is a great way to make sure that they're doing some form of dual-factor authentication. Again, backup, DR, doesn't by default come with infrastructure as a service. Yes, there's some basic capabilities built in so that if a piece of hardware fails within Azure or Azure Government, you're protected. But the reality is, as you know, AWS customers found out, what, 2 weeks ago, sometimes there can be issues, right? And so, you know, there are tools and capabilities provided by Microsoft that can be done to perform automated backups, do DR failovers from region to region, as well as to work with perhaps other partners that you might be using today. Commvault is downstairs. They offer Azure DR and backup services and capabilities as well. In terms of ExpressRoute, you know, we kind of started the presentation, we touched on ExpressRoute. If you're looking at FedRAMP and compliance, check out the FedRAMP TIC overlay design that GSA and a bunch of cloud providers are working on. I believe it's in preview. It basically, the premise is that if you're deploying, and I'll probably not do this 100% correct, so if I'm wrong, don't shoot me. But the premise is that, you know, traditionally you deploy a data center and nobody else had access to that data center. Obviously in cloud, where there's a lot of externally facing capabilities, you can't just, you know, shut the door and say it's protected. But there are ways to deploy workloads where those workloads do not have internet connectivity. And so the idea is, if you know TIC and the TIC design, that by leveraging an express route and then ensuring that your virtual network does not have direct internet connection, it would meet the same type of requirements that currently customers leverage for, you know, TIC, the trusted internet connectivity design. And then finally, you know, again, we talked about NSGs, the network security groups, being able to leverage the firewall that's built in to Azure to be able to segment your application, even when you're doing multi-tier applications. But you can also fall back to the old IP forwarding or use it in conjunction. And then you can also leverage both Cisco and other virtual firewall appliances on top of Azure Government so that your traditional network team, for example, can manage some of those capabilities and do reporting and compliance checks. All right, so going back to some of the Microsoft things that they wanted to touch on, Azure Government, there's a bunch of resources out here. So, you know, Azure Government site, the blog is awesome. The different teams within the government team are constantly blogging and, you know, talking about, you know, releases as well as ideas of how they're deploying. You can get a government trial, again, if you're a, you know, partner, as long as you have a government contract. If you're a government customer, it's pretty easy. Documentation, to me, that was one of the biggest changes last year, the fact that they developed a specific documentation site for Azure Government. We, you know, touched on a few pieces up there today. And then there is actually an Azure Government DC user group through the Meetup site. We meet once a month, usually either Microsoft government folks or partners give a talk, and you know, there's a happy hour afterwards, so it's a lot of fun. And if you are not from DC, they have started streaming them. Kind of another piece that we wanted, there are some government related Azure Government sessions today and tomorrow. So please make sure you check them out. And you know, this was a kind of a level 100 high level discussion, but there are some Microsoft and partner presenters that are deep diving into some of these solutions and capabilities. And then finally, there is a Azure Government group at the main rotunda down here where you can go find them and ask questions. And there is a Ask the Expert session today, I think from 6 to 7. So if you stick around, you can come talk to us or anybody else that's presenting today or tomorrow. And I'll just leave this up, but that is it for our presentation. So thank you all for coming. If you have any questions, you can take them.